No, Mr. Price, you know I often say I gravitate to you for your songness and your look. I'm a straightforward kind of person, man. And anybody knows me well knows I'm not indignant, but you speak forcibly and assertively. I like your songness and how you tackle things. When people come with stupidity, the day that you deem that I come with stupidity and you got to correct me, I'm not going to be taken back. I can understand that Mr. Price does not gravitate to a lot of stupidity. And I'm feeling bad about that. I like how you could not have been better put from how you just placed it there in respect to the DLP as an institution and all that it would have acquired over time. Cannot be thrown out the baby with the bathwater. What kind of head you have to not understand that, sir? Pray tell me.
All right,
but,
sir.
look, I ain't going to try to contain myself. And let me hear something to say, because somebody that is not good with analysis will come and say, well, he's here, he's like gloating, he's still a deal of foolishness. I'm not going to subscribe to that or even answer that. I am saying that you are crystal clear that the institution as a DLP is necessary to be had in our governance as we've got it down the side of town. And you're very, very right. I will endorse everything that you say. Now, you're talking about freedom and all this. Freedom starts with one in their core. Freedom emanates from you, from in your mind. Nobody can make you free. You got to make yourself free. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, but the problem is that you would have all these rules and regulations and laws in society that would be put in place that would make sure to, I don't want to use the word enslave, but make sure to regulate whatever you do in life.
But you could revolutionize those.
Not really. Look at the United States. I mean, let's look at the United States, where the black man has been, black man and minorities, but I dealing specifically with black people.
Yeah.
They have been free, quote unquote free, emancipated mm-hmm. for the last few centuries. But
yeah.
It's only in 1960s that you really started to see under the civil rights movement that you actually really got a lot of progress taking place. And then even when that progress was taking place in terms of looking at rights, greater rights and greater equality that was taking place, those who held the levers of power, they did their best to ensure
resistance
that black people would still remain in subjugation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah. I mean, up to today, you had a black president, and I mean, in my view, he did a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But the reality is, at the end of the day, is that the laws in the individual states and the attitude of those who run the institutions in the individual states still try to keep black people under subjection. I know we have a president, and his actions speak louder than words.
Oh, yeah. No,
I would put it that way.
Yeah. But let me close on this one. When I say that you... freedom starts in the core and within your mind. Look, for instance, there was a system going, and like persons, as you rightfully put in the back there in the revolution, in Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and those persons, they revolutionized this, as it were. Their freedom emanated from in their core, and they allowed it to come out. And Rosa Parks, she ain't going in the back of no bus, and Martin Luther said this and all those other folks.
They took a stand.
A stand.
And
right.
And that stand was ill. And because of the positions that they took and because of everything that happened thereafter,
yeah.
What I'm saying is that greater rights were established.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what I'm talking, okay, I think I didn't want to go into much detail, but you have like inner cities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You had a situation where how developers operated so that they zoned areas. So blacks could only live in certain areas. So, yeah, you had all these rights. But
yeah.
the But if you zone the areas in such a way that one set of areas was a type of housing, and the schools within those areas were basically not as well as other areas. So that you have the inner cities where ghettos were developed. Right. All right.
Yeah.
And I mean, it would be going to this a long time.
A long time.
But those are the types of ways that those in power fought back. So yes, you had the right to an amalgamated school, to go into school next to white, to the other white children. So the people, the poorer whites, and other ethnic groups end up going to those areas in those zones.
Yeah.
But the better schools still continue to be white, but just a few token blacks. That was became the reality. Right.
Mr. So, Price, I'll say to you, Sir F. Crossers, I'm awfully sorry, but I'm saying to you that however we juggle with this, we've got to start the freedom from in our core and in our mind, and then keep our focus and vigilance intact, and do it from within ourselves. And no one can do it for us. That is still my view and concept, sir. Thank you. I regard you.
Okay, sir. Bye bye. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Price.
How are you today?
How are you? Enjoying your day?
Sorry, I didn't quite hear that.
Are you enjoying your day today?
I am enjoying my day very well. It's really about you. You're outside there in the lovely sunshine. What are you doing for Emancipation Day?
I am the sunshine. No, I'm not in the sunshine. I just said a gentleman was talking that he would like Mr. Burt to come back out and go on stage, but
He didn't say that. He said he hopes that no one will rush Smokey's recuperation to get him back on stage so quickly.
Yes, but I would like him to recover and help himself. And don't think about no going no stage. He have to think about his life first. You understand?
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
So I would like I hope that he come back recover. Mm-hmm. And don't think about no stage. His life is worth more than stairs.
Agreed.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So
what else do you want to talk about today apart
you
from...
You have a blessed day.
You gone already? Short and sweet. Good morning. You're on the air. It's 10:50.
Good morning. Is this Mr. Price?
It is.
Hello?
Yes, it is.
Right. Okay, Mr. Price. I hear you have a fellow there just now talking about the Democratic Labor Party, right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to say this. I'm going to be very brief on this. I want him to know clearly that Belgians don't want to hear, see, anything at all to do with the Democratic Labour Party. They have sucked the life out of Belgians. They have messed up this country. And they don't want to hear nothing about them. So I tell he and he crew to go and rest themselves in peace. That's all I got to say.
No, I don't want to run yet. Don't run yet. Hello? Don't run yet. Let's have a discussion. All right, I mean, let's try to have a real discussion about this.
Uh-huh.
Are you speaking about the Democratic Labour Party, or are you speaking about the individuals who were representing the Democratic Labour Party? Let's be clear.
But them is who formed the party in the first place.
No. The people who formed the Democratic Labour Party.
The members, right?
Are the thousands of average Barbadians, okay? The people who happen to rise to the top to be the candidates, they have represented those members. They clearly did not do a good job in representing their members. That is why, at the end of the day, most of their, not members only, but most of the supporters of the Democratic Labour Party either did not vote or voted against them.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Because, I mean, when you look at the total votes and then you look at the trends, the voting patterns over the last several elections, you recognize that. And they did not do that because they were upset with those people. My point, and I think the gentleman's point, was that the institution called the Democratic Labour Party is a great institution. It did a tremendous amount for Barbados, and therefore it should not be allowed to die.
Well, I will say this, Mr. Price, right? The Democratic Labour Party was really a nice party when Barr was running it, right?
Yeah.
If Mr. Barr had come back alive today, I'm certain that as long as he come back to life and he see what's going on, he will fall back and dead at the same time. This is where I'm coming from. These people have a good party, all right. But look what they have done. They have run the country down.
Yeah.
And not only that, but they have caused Bajans to suffer and suffer tremendously. And not only that, also, but the state that they got the country in right now, I don't think this is good enough. And I'm certain that most Bajan people wouldn't want to hear none of them surface back again. That's all I got to tell you, Mr. Price.
All right, sir. You have a great day.
Same to you, man.
Okay, man. And this person here is saying there are several other parties that can be in opposition, and to say that the DLP should be the one chosen is an insult to the electorate. This guy is just spewing what he normally does, partisan politics. And this other person is saying, your current caller is praising you, saying that he agrees with your analysis, read the DLP. But let it not be lost on the listeners that he strongly supported their policies and actions over the last 10 years when they were running this country into the ground. People like that make me sad. Sir, just lower your radio and listen to... Sir, just or whoever is on the line, please lower your radio and just listen to the telephone. It's 10:54. We go to another call. Good morning, you're on the air. Good morning, you're on the air.
Yes, anchor.
Yes, you're back. Thank you.
You know my business. That was a call.
Well, you know you're gonna tell me your business right now. All you gotta do is keep the phone off, so that we can have a chat.
Yeah.
And you're not distracted.
We were dealing pertaining to slavery.
Yes.
And as I read, and I would like most of the schools in Barbados to take a tour in Nicholas Abbey, I get the true history of this country.
What do you mean, true history? But what are you talking about? What is the true history? You have 1 minute. What is the true history of this country?
The true history is like, when they deal with slaves, where the slave trade went on, pertaining to that Nicholas Abbey, and how the slaves were being sold. And I say this because I could speak with vast experience of how the estates were being managed. Look, a slave was an asset to the slave owner. And when I hear people say slaves were treated badly, could you expect a slave to work the lands in those days with their hands and work hard and be ill-treated? What sort of production would you get from them slaves? Huh? And then got to buy slaves again? No, don't get on that road with our foolishness, man. I reach the point that when I hear historians talking...
Sir, do you recognize...
slaves were treated? That's wrong.
Do you have a point? Because they were a tool and they were a means to an end of making a business successful, which is
exactly
the point that I made. Hold on. But the fact about the matter is, sir, and the historical record is there for that, you were owned. Like you own a dog. Okay, now if you were to shoot that dog that you have right there right now, there are regulations to deal with you. You can't just shoot your dog like that,
right?
Okay, and just dispose of it like that. That you recognize that, right? And we're talking just a dog.
That's what I'm saying, because I could tell you.
But hold on, do you know that despite the fact that there were supposedly rules as well that you should not ill-treat your property in those ways, they were really, and the record is there, okay? I can't quote from some of the books, but the record is there. The penalty was very sparse. It was hardly ever imposed. And it would only have been imposed on people who were known to be exceptionally cruel. But the reality is that you were owned. And that was the point that was being made.
I agree with that. I'm running from that point. I'm running from that. But if you have a motor car in my business that I use as a taxi, would you expect me to take my car and run it up and down the road like how a man just got a sports car and damage it and expect to make money from the same car? Huh? No, those people had to be treated in a certain respect and being fed in order to do the work. Now, let me finish off at this point since I was off and I hear my good friend lamenting. Are you joining him talking about that he did to the institution?
All right, but don't, hold on. Don't just jump from two things to the next. I would really, because since it's emancipation, you'll always get a chance to talk about the DLP.
I want it, but not emancipation. And people still about the place. Got to be paying $20,000 to feed politicians and all sorts of food. Now you talk about emancipation.
But that is the point. That is the point of this whole issue. Look where we came from.
And look where we are now.
And look where we are now. And that's the point. You're making the connection.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah. That is why I said during the very conservative time, you were named honorary members of parliament and they were not paid. And if you look and see what we pay politicians today and what service we get from politicians, and then he can tell me about a great institution that wrecked this country. And now the taxpayers got to be paying extra money for water and all sorts of things to solve the problem that these people left. And why these people fly over in the horizon with big cash in the pocket and the poor people got to carry the penalty. You talk about emancipation, about a DLP. Well, let him come with the DLP. You could got an institution that you had the PPP, nobody and put them in power. The DLP will remain out there. They have done so much damage to the poor people of this country that they could never, ever recover. They repeat it continuously.
All right, sir. Well, thank you a lot. You made your point. I totally disagree with you. The Democratic Labour Party made a tremendous contribution to this country, and we need to separate the individuals who happen to be running the country from the institution itself. Okay, please let us do that, and then you would understand the point that I was trying to make. The Democratic Labour Party is a great institution, and they did a tremendous amount for this country. We take a commercial break, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Tacks. I just want to, before you actually go to the phone lines, I just want to really, we have a lot of messages here. And this thing with the DLP, I never thought it would generate such response. This person is saying, representatives form the party just as those who formed the Republican Party ran that party. Funny how we can see fit to judge Republicans accordingly, but can't judge the DLP in the same light. The people forming the party by not voting basically handed the country over to the DLP, and thus handed the country over to destruction. Let's be real. And then this other person is saying, well, short and sweet, tell he talk for himself. And, well, I won't read any more because a lot of them are very, very negative. But the point is that people still have very strong feelings. The election was about May 24th, not so long ago. And they have strong feelings. But I just want a number of you to recognize that there is a difference between what an institution represents and what sometimes the people who come to head that institution at a particular time do. And you have to see the difference between the two. I know people really don't see the difference. It's like some people tell you about Barbados, what Barbados stood for. So they're talking about the whole concept of Barbados and what we stand for as against what has happened present day in Barbados. It's like when we look at the United States, what the United States stood for, land of free and the brave, et cetera, et cetera. But as against what is happening now in the country. We've got to see the difference. And I know that's very difficult to do. And the whole issue of slavery, this person here is saying there are literally thousands of records to say how slaves were treated. How dare he sit here and say that slaves were not mistreated? My blood is boiling listening to this moron spew foolishness. There are actual records, pictures, drawings, journals of how slaves were treated, tortured, maimed, murdered. As a black man, he should sit up and stop saying these things. Right? There are, of course, very, very strong feelings about slavery as well and about what happened during slavery. But what you need to recognize again on this issue is that at the end of the day, it was an economic system, and when it was no longer viable, they got rid of it and put the system they had, they have now in place. They had thereafter in place. So the goalposts are always being moved. But at the end of the day, it's those who have trying to control the economic system to continue to make money, continue to feather their own nest at the expense of other human beings. That has always been, and it continues to be. And this is why we have faith and believe in God and believe in a better tomorrow. We go to the phone lines. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Man, not too bad at all. How are you?
I am fine. Can I identify you?
Of course.
This is Charles Morris on the line, Reverend Charles Morris. And one of the things I raised as well was the fact that the Anglican Church has been unable to choose a bishop. And I just wanted to get your perspective on that whole issue.
Well, I can give you my perspective, but after I make a little correction, having heard you just now saying that slavery is an economic system and they got rid of it. Maybe the English got rid of it using the political institution of the parliament. Mm-hmm. But you must understand, too, that this is something that the enslaved people fought from the very beginning, even from the time they were caught in Africa, they fought the system, and don't ever ignore that. Mm-hmm. To say that, you know, that the British got rid of it because of, it was no longer of any use to them, I'm sure that they would find arguments that which, if you read people like Drescher and that group of people, mm-hmm, they would tell you that English would have good arguments to say that even at the time when they got rid of it, that it was profitable. It was profitable, but the other arguments from below, which will tell you that the enslaved people fought the system from the very beginning,
And that's what made it unprofitable. Taking the big picture, that's what really made it unprofitable. The big picture.
A lot of things that the enslaved people did, even people that today would call immoral. Almost everything they did was a fight to the system, a fight against what they were in, and I think the what was happening today, and the biggest factor involving emancipation, is that we had landless emancipation.
Yep.
And that is a serious thing, and you know what has plunged us into. In fact, we are still enslaved, not mentally as I think as people say, but there's one thing that is enslaving a lot of barbarians. And that is a mortgage. Mm-hmm. A mortgage is stopping a lot of them from doing what they would want to do. Mm-hmm. Give a barbarian a mortgage, and you have his life forever.
You keep him anchored.
Yes. Think about those things.
But that's the system.
Yeah. Yes. What do you tell me you want to
And we could go on talking about this all day, but I suspect we are really saying the same thing in just different words. Anyhow, your take on what's happening in the church, sir, that you're a part of.
I felt very badly yesterday when somebody blamed me for us not electing a bishop. I don't know who they could blame me. It happened Tuesday night as well. It's Tuesday or Monday night. Monday night, that happened as well. They blame me for it. They said that it's because of me that we don't have a bishop. I don't think that is accurate at all. This would have been the third election of a bishop that I would have been involved in. And there is a picture that's etched in my mind since 1994 when I saw a priest and a member of the laity shook hands before the election took place. And in no time, he walked out with the bishop. In 2000, we saw one person backing down in favor of another. This year, that didn't happen. And one of the things you must understand is we had different personnel in Synod at this time. And of course, we had different candidates. And we did not reach a conclusion. I'm going to be very honest with you. My take on it, I do not blame the priest. I do not blame the laity. I, in my humble opinion, I think the synod was not effectively led. It seems as though that those who were responsible for leading it were not au fait with the traditions of parliamentary procedures of how to deal with a meeting. There were many points of order that were, you know, it was a whole, to me, it was mass confusion. It was mass confusion. And I get the impression that people went in there with their minds made up and they were not going to change at any point. Okay? In the end, I feel that the right decision was made. Now that I can look back at it, the right decision was made. Bring in someone who is removed from this situation. Because to me, the Anglican Church since 2000 has been in significant decline. Real decline. If you look at the decline of membership, decline of the church plant, I mean, look at the amount of buildings that are about the place. This has been a decline of its influence on the society. It's no longer seen as a real institution of its moral and religious authority. There's a decline of its impact on the society. The morale of the priest, to me, seems to be not there. There's a decline in persons and the quality of persons offering themselves for the priesthood. A decline in even the confirmation that we have. It is in total decline. And I don't want to use Malthus's word. The decline is exponential, as far as I'm concerned. So I agree with having not been able to elect a bishop in the synod. We must also understand that the bishop is, that the selection, though, as it would be, is all part of the process. If you do not elect, this is what happens. The one we sent in. Do not blame us. We are in the province of the West Indies. You know, the province of the West Indies. And if you want an idea of what Caribbean unity should be like, you should also check the church. That this was working since, I think it was 1883 or 1893. We have been one since then. So it does not, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a bishop come in from another part of the Caribbean. We are still one, right, Sanga?
I would like to think so.
Oh, good. So we have had Barbadians who have been bishops in other places. We have had Bishop Wood, Bishop in Croydon. Peter Fenty right now is bishop in Canada. Sion Goodrich has been bishop of the Windward Islands. So I think we have to expand our minds as far as this is concerned. There are many things, as I said, that happened that could have made the result better, and I blame it on the leadership. The leadership of that synod was extremely poor. At the same time, I talk about decline. You know, we have to ask ourselves some serious questions in this Anglican Church in Barbados. We have to ask ourselves what has happened in the recent history that has propelled us into this. When you look at the areas of decline and the areas of increase, you have to ask yourself, why do we exist as a church? Why are we existing as a church? Let me tell you, I have seen the increase, and this is public knowledge because I have seen the reports that were written. And it's something I have questioned and will continue to question. We are in decline in society, yet where is our increase? Increase from $38,000 for professional fees to $105,000. Land tax from $1,797 to $145,000. Increase for the bishop's residence up to $94,616 a month. Where is our emphasis? And that is why I think it is time for somebody else to come in now and try to, as a person who does not have this kind of connection. I think the synod lost it, really, really lost it, when we could not even interpret our own regulations. And we have a situation where the authorities turned to the senior bishop for him to interpret a regulation for us, when the persons who were in charge of the regulations should be interpreting the regulations for the church. They turned to a bishop to interpret the regulation. Now, that was evil, simply because we would have been put putting the senior bishop in a position of compromise, because in the end, he is the final arbiter. And to put that him in at this moment was, to my mind, not right. And again, the leadership is responsible there.
Mm-hmm. But you made the point. What I want to find out from you now is, going forward, okay, we may bring in somebody.
No, I don't think we should be going to bring one. But my point is that, to me, mm-hmm. the whole, there was some compromise of the election process, a lot of it.
All right, but I would want, before I go down that road, I would want to have someone, another perspective on that. So instead of dealing with that, let us look at the laity, the people who make up the church.
Mm.
And how do you think that they would respond now that they did not get their wish?
Well, when you said, what was the wish of the laity?
If I look at the vote, I would have to...
If you look at the vote.
Right.
You see, that's the other thing. What we have here is lay representatives of a church, and they have their independent vote. My point, my question is, the persons who are representing the church, do they represent the entire church, or do they represent their own views? They were representing their own views.
You're sure about that?
Huh?
Are you sure about that?
They voted independently. They voted... I am not aware that any church called all the laity together and say that this is, or the laity told their representatives this is how they should vote.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I'm saying that they went in there to vote independently of anything.
But we must say, Mr. Morris, that you supported a particular candidate.
Mm-hmm.
You supported one candidate, so you mm-hmm. may take that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No, but I'm saying to you that the way it is that when the lay representative churches go in there, mm-hmm. they're not influenced by what the thinking of their individual church is.
I see.
They're not influenced by that. I heard some of the lay members talking, and they say we want to rule the church. We are voting for change because we want to rule the church. We should be ruling the church. We are the ones who pay the offering. They were saying that they want someone who could bring young people. No one man can bring young people in the church. As a matter of fact, you and I know that the young people in Barbados are not irreligious. My feeling is that we are failing to make them make sense, failing to make religion make sense to the people. That's where our fallen is. And I can use two examples where if you do not make something make sense, you will turn off the people, and I can use you and Dennis Johnson for that.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Then you won't put me in trouble.
Hey, Mr. Morris.
No good trouble.
Well, at least you got out your perspective, but I must make it clear for the record that you would have supported, a senior moment there. You would have supported one of the candidates in.
How do you know his candidate?
This is based on newspaper reports, sir, and I go over those newspaper reports. Unless you're going to say that they were not accurate.
I'm not saying they're not accurate. Yes,
I see what I'm saying, and I'm very serious about this. Mm. The fact is that there were two candidates. Mm. One candidate was supported heavily by the majority of the clergy. The mm-hmm. other candidate was supported heavily by the majority of the laity.
Mm-hmm.
So there clearly was that divide.
There was that divide. And
as far as I know, you were part of the ones who were on the side of the ones who were supporting the clergy, as you know, you were on that side.
That is true.
So all I'm saying is that I would love to hear the other perspective.
Mm-hmm. I would love to hear it too. Okay. Because as I said, if I was chairing that synod, when I say reaching that stage, I would have called the two candidates, sat down with them and tell them what my feelings were.
But are you sure that was not done?
But are you sure that was not done? Yes, I'm sure.
Okay.
I'm sure. I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you why as well. Because there was even a move to have a former bishop talk to them. One agreed and the other did not agree to it.
Okay.
And my thing, I wanted to make the point that if Senate had made such a mandate and then one refused and one refused, then Senate should make his feeling known to that particular candidate. But then, you know, to come back and say that this next thing didn't happen, I have some serious questions about the way that Senate was conducted. And that's the honest truth. That's the honest truth.
All right, sir.
I just want to know that you were there. I did not. It was not my fault. It was not my fault.
All right,
but
sir.
We need, the truth is, I'm glad that happened this way. We need somebody away from all of that that's happening in Barbados to come in and repair, because we need repair in the Anglican Church. We need a lot of it. It has really, 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 really declined.
Okay. All right, so you've made a point. We got to take a commercial break. Thank you. And we'll talk another time.